Thank you, and thank you very much for having me. It's a great honor to read and obey you. So I'm going to start with a poem that I used to say that this is a poem about what Harold Bloom called the anxiety of influence, but it's essentially a poem about, you know, when you read, you know, like, your favourite poets, and then you think, oh, what I write is really bad. This is what the poem is about. It's called Shepherd. Rain and heat were the order of the day when they packed 12 sheep into a small room, square, with one painting for decoration, a broken television and a VCR, all in the corner for show or function, if they even had as much. One shepherd to a dozen sheep. When the air heaved, she sheared the ones worth shearing. When it grew still, she would scold those whose bleats were weak, so that they, too, might walk the path alone. She had shown them what they faced in her tales of lions from the Moy, Inchicore, North Belfast, and Cork. So the next poem, so this is from my Alba collection, Groundwork, which Mary here has some copies of if anyone wants to support my publisher. So this is a poem called Remember When, and it was recently published in the shop. They used to stop at every watering hole. Had you a headache, you had it 4 hours. A theory that would go untested. When the Bunsen burner was handed back, they were boiling the Starbucks on it. Whatever that was, something new, not quite right. He was over in Saudi Arabia, one of them countries anyway. Ireland's wasted its finest sons. Bums need to be put on seats after all. Balls caught and the harvest put to proper use. It's all a lot of bother that. The driver was there for driving. What concern was it of his when there's watering holes to be reached? None. He'd driven in better times, carrying more precious cargo. Now he carries fat pigs, reminded of how their snouts had pressed too deep, dazzled by bright lights and dumb like animals, or humans who'd forgotten what it meant to be human. Where once he oversaw the passage of generals and devoted fathers, now he herded pigs, pining for better days 30 years ago to remember. This is a poem that Lady Quillenaud said was my most developed piece that she's ever read. I don't know is that a compliment or a comment on the rest of my work, but nonetheless, it's called Moll's Gap. She looked like she was down from the moors as opposed to out of the box where she usually sat. She made good use of that space, but it was just as well that she took some clean air every now and again. She showed me bog moss and taught me how it sucked up all the Irish oak. I'll always know that Pat blind. This is, I suppose it is a poem about the futility of literature, and it was published in the last issue of, or the issue before the recent one, of Southward, Children's Ward. Would it make any difference if I wrote your name like Ozymandias, or would you rather sit awake waiting for toy soldiers, worried they might not come? Shall I tell of you by mossy stones where you yourself might want to climb, scrape your knee and pine for eyes the colour of which you can't quite recall? What if I put down your tail for all to know? Would you rather touch Murano glass, taste chocolate until you're sick, and stay up late watching cheap telly? And the last one from this collection is called Busking in the Tate. That's essentially a poem about scumbags. Kicking hacky sacks, the swans sought shelter from the orange glow, gathering their precious Belgian metals, thinking they'd struck gold from the Zuyder Zee. Leonidas, each and every one, staring down docile bards who tell authentic tales firsthand, busking in the Tate, sharing their banter with bears, marking territory sown by fools who sought to mark their own. So the next piece I'm going to read is from a recent collection, a recent anthology called New Eyes on the Great Book, which was edited, it was published by the Munster Literature Centre under their under Southward Editions. It was edited by Graham Allen and Pat Cotter. It's essentially so those of you that don't know, in the late 80s, there was a book put together, a beautiful book. I'm not against beautiful books. that basically included all of Ireland's canonical poets. And about 12, 18 months ago, UCC bought this book for $1 million. So I'm all for beautiful books, but so when Graham and Pat put this, so the idea was that they'd get 20 young poets, and we'd respond to the Great Book of Ireland in this new collection, which was just launched last week. It's a wonderful collection. I feel like a bit of an imposter amongst all these fantastic poets, but so sincerest thanks to Graham and Pat for including me. And then next to Leanna Sloan and Matthew Sweeney, which, you know. So the poem is called, so this is in response to the Great Book of Ireland, and the poem is called Silent Places. There is a park in Nara where rust and grime are all that greet the fog as it rolls through this forgotten place, and a city in northern Ukraine, long remembered, that is just as silent before the squeal of fluorescent iron twisting in the wind. We know of the sheds in Wexford, but deep in finer constructs, there are ghosts kept locked behind 2-inch plexiglass, fading slightly as the air seeps into their silent necropolis. But it is safe here, in solitude, where their labours will not be in vain. Look out across this wasteland. The burn has spread, making Nara and Pripyat of Tokar and the Loch. There are no benefactors at hand to save the sons and daughters in Cork Airport. And now, as the fog rolls in, here too it greets silence. So now we get to the new stuff. So I recently had a short collection, highly commended in the Munster Literature Centre's Food for Poetry competition. So I'm going to take some of the, since I didn't win, I'm going to get to read the pieces. So I've basically taken a selection of pieces from that for tonight, which kind of carry on from the sort of theme we were holding in the New Eyes collection. And the first one is called Air Square. Crystal chimes with the vibrations from the guests overhead, but if you complain, it shows a terrible lack of sophistication, that you aren't used to the clang of a sensitive chandelier. Heavy curtains conceal tall windows, protected out the front, but backed up by newer stuff that slides the opposite way, so you could open the old and new at once to let the air in. The view is of the square, a view enjoyed by Dev himself and Lamasse, Fitzgerald, and Dalglish, even Charles de Gaulle. It was taken and put to use by Her Majesty's forces once, before our dealing sort returned and promptly handed over to one of Ireland's many armies who lost and won it back. It suffered the emergency, but enjoyed a boon from the railways. Liam O'Flaherty sat there for much of the Renaissance, straining for the echoes of voices. Do the same, and you'll note the drunks pissing on the pathway, stumbling along in the name of Patrick. This is a piece. So this is my brother recently went to Australia, so a lot of the collection was about sort of the idea of immigration, and I'm actually heading for the US in tomorrow week. So this is a poem called The Places We Go. They all spoke of the places we would go, so very sure that we wanted to go anywhere. Had they not tasted the chips lathered in salt and vinegar, and seeing the messy waves slap against each other, having pushed back off the sea wall where birds and seagulls sat. This place is inconsequential to many, like all the places that we go. They are places, nothing more. Salted pretzels only serve as a cheap reminder of chips, and the waves aren't wild here. They are weak, they don't rise up to meet you, and we are far from the sea. Oh, to be able to make up our own minds, to wait in that place of waiting, gladly confused, exploring limbo. We're not really that bothered with heaven and hell, but with fish and chips, mushy peas, and the density of curry that's thick in the city, but thins as you head further west. This was, didn't share the same title, but it was essentially the title poem from that collection. It's called Katie. I met Katie, the collection was courting Katie. I met Katie down on Pana, a young bureau with legs that gave her the walk of a queen. we shifted off Don Square, where I told her how she blossomed, bloomed, how there'd never be a man to take my place. Knocking back Jameson in the road, we scoffed that we were well beyond places like this, that the old women passing by were better suited to the church-like benches than young boys and girls like us. Come away, she coaxed, and I did, down Parnell's place, holding her hair while she vomited, my left foot lodged in discarded pizza, the smell of urine in my nostrils, ready to be held myself. When Graham asked me to submit the piece to the Great Book Anthology, I wrote about like 12 of them before I gave him the one that was in the anthology. I didn't send him 12, he rejected 11. I wrote 12 and sent him one or two. This is one of the ones I didn't send him, and it's called Necropolis. You could hardly think when the wind swept over that tin roof, a shed converted to a bedroom, rattling in the night, with stray drops on the sheets from the ceiling, jarring you awake as something scratched the plasterboard, desperate to make it to the other side, beyond the falling sea. A plastic lamp of seemingly perpetual light cast a shadow on the pack of lickspittles. Did you know then that he'd be your patron? You grope for structure here too, where mushrooms grow on the sill, but don't know which way to reach. Did the bailout from Ulster Bank help your groping? There was more sweat than craft pour here, a night spent sleeping, with muscles sore from cutting into Kingspan with a handsaw. Are these inadequacies made lesser by seven-figure tones locked away? Here is your necropolis, in this basement where words come to die. A lot of people keep saying to me, you know, how are you going to get on in America? You know, it's going to be such a culture shock for you. But I mean, we're pretty much Americanized here, I think, to be fair. I read this recently to a North American audience and they loved it, so I'm curious to see if I'll get the same response here. It's kind of pro-American culture, which is
probably not going to get the same response.
But nonetheless, it's American telly. We're well used to folly, to adopting pell-mell the half-baked produce of a larger tyrant that snuck in without laying a violent hand. We've been told what we must do to produce our best, to resist the sodomite, keep our heads above the gushing water and the dim sands. But when he asks if she wants to go round again, and they thank us at the end for the ride, you see what you fear, and you adore every moment. Is there anybody here from Cove? No?
Thank God.
Well, I can read this then. It's called The Holy Ground. It greets you like a bookshelf or the selection in a sweet shop. St. Coleman keeping a watchful eye on greedy little boys and mischievous girls reaching for a taste of something sharp and sour. Blackjacks and fruit salads gobbled all at once, chewed and packed between watery cheeks. Joseph guards the western door so children might not pass with sticky fingers, smudging the fine limestone from Mallow and the blue docky granite and the Kilkenny marble, the Belgian slate and Californian pitch pine. Here is not a place for unwashed children. Sailors sang about this place, raising anchors, hoping to find a torn rigging that might send them for shore with the secrets of their mind piled high. Vigil still kept from the hill, but like the shanties, they have been seen for what they are. The shop fronts are fading now, and children keep hold of their mothers. So this is, whenever I go anywhere, I tend to see if there are, I have a fascination with ghost towns. I used to have a fascination with ghost towns. If I was traveling anywhere, I'd find if there are any ghost towns, I'd go visit them. But you know, the last few years, the novelty of ghost towns has kind of worn off. This is a poem called Ghost Towns. An old forgotten ford leans on tireless rims, bulging sockets from where its eyes were gouged, wilting on a face frozen in time. It's some model only the keenest of connoisseurs could now discern, its spokes digging into parched Nevada floor. The Limousin, there is a graveyard for these, a martyred village where rust reigns over man's discarded toys, buried beneath the crumbling walls and scorched bricks. The sun casts hideous shadows over the skeletons of bedroom furniture. They say we don't have any, but for a cardboard set, now gone, that sprung up on the Dingle Peninsula. There are more of these, pockmarks where echoes rattle among the thin walls, and brown swing sets on ground as parched and scorched as anywhere. When I say Oggy, 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 Oi, 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 does everybody know what I mean? Yeah? Well, it's a poem called The Mob. Down in the lower embankment by the ninth, we caught glimpses of the apocalypse. No hop-ons, that was the plea, drowned out by the applause. Oggy, 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 Oi, Oi, Oi. Held down, he spit in his face, disgusted to be pinned. This wasn't how boys behaved. The mob needed a show. The mob would talk, show their thumbs. Oggy, 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 Oi, Oi, Oi. Nobody knew how we came to the hollow, but there we were, telling mothers the usual, that we train near detention, anything to keep the women happy, innocent of our deeds. We were men going to war. Why trouble them until we came home, teary-eyed, with scrapes that needed mending and stories that we hoped would be dragged out of us so we'd sleep sounder. I really wanted to make him cry, but he pulled a compass, waving it wildly, sensing the loss of his bravado. He needed to be sure that the mob would tell the history of it differently. On quiet days, we just lined the corridors, beating the smaller fellas, as we'd been shoved and kicked when we were new and timid, walking that passage built of the cold white stones from sleepless nights. Hatred rose and died without reason. Even now it makes little sense. It was just the way we were, the way we had to be. Forgetting the useful words, all we wanted was Oggy, 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 Oi, Oi, Oi. I was on a train to Belfast recently, and there was over the course of the journey, several different tourists sat with me, and they inspired this poem. It's called Platform 2. Those of you that have ever taken the train to Belfast will realize that not much changes when the tourists expect it. In May, I crossed Dublin on the Lewis, going from one station to its disconnected other. Here, stations point in only one direction. We left Connolly with little more than a lurch, as gently the old Enterprise geared up for her journey north beyond Kilnasagart. Skirting the coastline, the sea was just as grey, and the fields we came on were green, filled with cattle and sheep, idle and chewing. Pulling into Dundalk, I noticed the yellow backdrops, Buscullagh, and the signs you could read twice, hanging by a poster for Roddy Doyle's new novel. We crossed a river or two, but little else. I watched on Google Maps as we overcame the dense grey line, sketched out with precision. A brown stain smeared the carriage window, much to the amusement of the New Zealander whose heart had been set on taking some pictures. Looking out on Newry, the sprawly mosaic with its momentary flashes was so familiar that I might as well have been staring across the glen. As the grey line grew further from our backs, the signs needed reading once, and children climbed on the bus. The livestock still enjoyed the grass. My New Zealand friend looked disappointed. As we came upon the rising smoke, the first thing we saw was a provocation pushing Roddy Doyle. For anyone who's been to school in Ireland, this is a poem called Uniforms. As the clock ticked towards the chime, they twist like gears as the horn rang in the deep and hollow halls. Turning like crankshafts, they heaved in unison towards the cage, their dark work suits marking them as disciplined pistons in a row of six, and then they sank deep below with their brothers or their sisters to that hollowed club. There were times when one would rise with coloured hair instead of a grey cap, or legs in place of a pleated skirt, a pierced nostril, a bearded face, an untucked shirt or dull shoes, unable to reflect his light spreading across the city. And when they arose, their brothers dragged them back into line so they could pound, disciplined, with each tick and horn blow. So, another four. I've been told that I don't banter enough with the audience, but... So I was gonna, if any of you ever seen Graham Reed, he's the regular of the banter, so I was gonna like steal some of his stories, but read here a couple of weeks ago, so I didn't have work. Nods and Bodies. Any, this is a poem called Nods and Bodies. We chased the ball so we'd feel worthy of our 10p pints of Raza, for which the ESB Sports Club was so widely famed. We basked in the glory when Luck sat the ball so neatly on your ankle that it dipped with grace into the far corner. We passed there rarely now, and alone, to see the grass undisturbed behind worn-out Coke machines, better kept than the rusting bars we once held up as the champion's target. Are we so old now in our 20s? Another poem about growing up in Ireland. This one is called Free Gaff. Nice. The Americans didn't appreciate these ones as much. They gathered round as she took a stand among the half-empty cans and paper cups, diligently revising their Irish declensions. He marked her jeans as he lay on her knee, drool seeping out the corner of his mouth. She'd not have noticed had his friends not. They walked under street lamps, conspiring like teenage congressmen, sipping a second can as the sun peered, convinced of everything. So I've written what I like to call like a series of the first poem I read, the whole anxiety of influence thing. I've written a series of those. This is another one I'm going to read. I like it's dedicated to. I've written like a series about Graham Allen and Orla Murphy, who are they're my PhD supervisors, but they're I just like to think it was my mentors. They've been kind of useful. Three years ago when I met them, I could not stand in front of an audience and read publicly. And now I do it pretty much every day. So this is a poem called Groundwork, which is not actually in the collection Groundwork, which seems to confuse people. But it's the same idea. I just kind of had this like grand scheme going on, but I think it might have been too grand. But anyway, this is a poem I'd like to dedicate to Graham and Orla and thank them for everything really. Groundwork. We came in over the Great Lakes, tracing fractures, distracting us from screens needing reading. If it can't hold what's great, it could hold an ordinary man as easy as hold him under. You taught me plate tectonic shape the world, be mindful of the cracks when walking. So I will finish on another poem that is very much connected to the whole ghost town theme. This, the Cord and Katy manuscript had ghost towns go up a lot. Ghost towns in the Great Book. I should call it Ghost Towns in the Great Book. But it's called Abandoned Places. When they made a game of silent Ferris wheels, we bought and shared and walked among the idle flats, as casually as though we were in Ballymun. The classroom was like a giant finger painting that the searing light had faded beyond repair. Is this where dreams come to die? Here, in reconstructed pre-highway middle America, leaning against buildings, pink and blue, enjoying the silence, distant arrow reminding them that they once had boots to run. Our grandfathers are out by Thames and Mersey, telling stories we should know but don't want to hear. They are beyond utility. Services rendered do not count as services needed. We have repaid our debt by leaving them be. Like a ship crash landed from another world it sits, a fist that could not punch through. Forget your past, it reminds us now, but the hammer and sickle are still clear, and its shadow still stretched beyond the hill. Couples could have been happy here. They would have been glad to put up tiles, remove plastic and wipe grime from the glass, and add some laughter and whispers to the wind. But forget here. Here is nothing now. Thank you.